The Columbia Broadcasting System extends to you an invitation to learning. Today, the Honorable Herbert C. Hoover, former President of the United States, joins Lyman Bryson and Professor John U. Neff of the University of Chicago in a discussion of De Re Metallica by Agricola. Now, here is Lyman Bryson.
The 16th century book on mining is a kind of example, I suppose, of the way in which a technological development is brought to a peak in historical development. And we're discussing the translation of it made some years ago by Mr. Hoover and Mrs. Hoover out of the original Latin, a translation which was done, as I can see, Mr. Hoover, with loving care and great scholarly labor.
May I say here, Mr. Bryson, as a member, a humble member of the craft of historians, that this book is a very remarkable achievement, the edition of Mr. and Mrs. Hoover. When you remember that it was done in off hours, late at night, when they had finished a hard day's work, and during vacations over a period of 6 years, you are filled with admiration, because as a scholarly work, it not only deals with the book itself, but with the whole background behind the book, running back to classical time. Moreover, it is explores every subject which the book treats, and it treats every side of mining and metallurgy. To do this for any scholar would be a great achievement. Now, after 40 years, because the edition came out in 1912, it stands up magnificently and is a contribution of the first importance to history, because the book itself is, as I think we're going to show this morning, a book worthy of the loving care Mr. and Mrs. Hoover gave it.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Mr. Neff, because your competence as a historian gives the compliment some authority. Mr. Hoover, you must have been struck by the importance of the book and its intrinsic interest, or you wouldn't have taken the trouble to produce it.
Dr. Bryson, might I digress just a moment to mention that this whole program seems to me a little bit incongruous in view of the nearness we are to the edge of a world precipice, but nevertheless, one, we have to carry on with life and living, and besides, it may furnish our listeners with a half hour's escape from the other dread things that may run through their mind.
After all, Mr. Hoover, this, as has been said before, is the civilization we're defending, isn't it?
It is. Well, this particular book is a part of a great group of literary products that came, of course, out of the awakening of learning, and more particularly followed the discovery of printing. And it's all a segment of the literary development of the Renaissance. That it involved two or three phases. Of course, these men who provided a number of books on medicine and metallurgy and mining, of which there are two of special importance in the metallurgical field. These men were familiar with the classics, but the classics were only available in manuscript up until the time of printing. So that with printing became the possibility of general distribution of books, and was an enormous stimulation to the publication and advancement of learning.
I don't believe, Mr. Hoover, that most historians give quite that much importance to printing. They seem to think that the mere rediscovery of the ancient manuscripts and so on accounted for the Renaissance and the reawakening. To your mind, the technological change of the printing itself was far more significant than they seem to think.
Well, I certainly think so, because the old manuscripts were only available in a few great libraries to a few people. And you take a case like the one we're discussing. I doubt whether Agricola would have had the opportunity to examine the classical material if it hadn't already been produced by the printing press by the time he began to work in this field. What is more, printing gave impetus to entirely a different thing, and that was the ability of men of cultural type to investigate the inheritances from father to son and the actual practices in medicine and metallurgy and mining, and reduce them to books which there was no opportunity for before printing. It was a stimulus to do it. So
might I say here, Mr. Hoover, that I'm very much struck by the way in which these works of Biringuccio and Agricola fit into the general history of the Renaissance. They seem related to the art as well as to the literature. And what strikes one about Agricola's very important work is the extraordinary gift for observation. It is a remarkable description of the minds of Central Europe, which were at this time the most important silver, copper, and lead mines in the world, and which had bloomed during the previous 70 years from about 1470. Now, what Agricola did was to look at these mines and metallurgical establishments with a piercing eye. And that was similar to what Leonardo was doing a little earlier. What impresses one in all these men is the extraordinary gift for observation, that which is new and fresh.
That piercing eye is just characteristic of the Renaissance, isn't it? It's the spirit of it.
Yes, it was a birth of a summation of knowledge which had accumulated since the classic times. There had been the enormous gap of the Dark Ages, and here these men brought it to light, not only out of the old manuscripts of classics, but they brought to light the accumulated knowledge in the period of 600 or 800 years.
Well, that knowledge of 600 or 800 years in the mines and in the mining of silver and other metals and in medicine and other things, Mr. Hoover, it passed from father to son, and it passed from master to apprentice and so on. Was it ever summed up in theory, or was it left as a kind of craftsmanship?
Well, there never was any summation of it up until the time of these books.
And printing was necessary for that summation.
I think it was.
So that makes printing the technological way of making it possible for the thing to be philosophical, scientific.
Yes, there were a few minor works prior to the books we're discussing. They were gotten up in little booklets in the nature of cookbooks, with recipes for metallurgical operations and surgical operations and stuff like that.
Little how-to-do-it books.
Little how-to-do-it.
Mr. Hoover, might I ask you whether, among the ancients, there was, so far as we know, any treatise completely devoted to mining and metallurgy as Agricola's treatise is? I know, for instance, that Pliny has only two books out of some 36 or 39 devoted to this subject.
No, there is no complete work in any classic period.
Well, Mr. Hoover, the Greeks and the Romans of the classic period had rather substantial mining operations, didn't they?
Oh, very. In fact, it's the great period of glory in Athens synchronized entirely with the period when they were getting large revenues from the mines of the Orient.
So the civilization and empire of Athens was upon a technological basis, just as modern empires.
And yet here, Mr. Bryson, one thing that strikes us is that the classical people, at least as manifested in the works of Plato, Archimedes, Pliny, Ovid, and Agricola deals specifically with Ovid, regarded the heavy exploitation of the treasures of the underworld as somehow indecent. They thought it shouldn't be pursued too relentlessly.
They were a little...
They objected to it.
A little uneasy about taking things out of
the earth. They were indeed. And what struck me in reading this work of Agricola, as I did last night again after having read it several times before, was that the whole of Book One is an answer to this argument of the ancients. And so far as I know, although my knowledge in this field is not considerable, the first answer, and a very effective philosophical answer, whether you agree with it or not.
Do you think, Mr. Hoover, that Agricola felt that he had to do this to justify his profession, or was it just pro forma that he...
Oh, he was really a great scholar. He had been educated in German universities and subsequently in the Italian universities as a doctor, and he happens that one of his earliest appointments was a doctor at Walthamstow, which was in the center of the then European mining boom.
It was actually the most important mine, Mr. Hoover, at that particular moment. It was most productive of silver in the world.
Incidentally, he had an interest in one of those mines and seems to have accumulated a competence out of it.
He talks a lot about the shares in mines, doesn't he, Mr. Hoover?
That's how they're financed as well as built. Well, Mr. Hoover, in the actual body of the book, as a book, I've read it, but not knowing enough about it technologically, does he give what was for his time and perhaps for some time after the best possible summation of methods of mining, of methods of smelting, of uses of metals and so on? Is the book a good manual, or is it just a...
Oh, no, the book was the standard textbook on these subjects. It covers probably 200 different metallurgical processes. Some of them had been described before, but never with so much clarity and ease of understanding. And this book, plus Baron Goetschius' Pyrotechnica, were the two textbooks of the whole of the metallurgical industry, I think, for 150 years.
What struck me as I read it as a complete layman, Mr. Hoover, was the extraordinary clarity and the illuminating quality of all these illustrations and diagrams which are reproduced in your text and also in the modern reproduction of your text.
Might I say here, Mr. Bryson, that these serve as a kind of guide in the very remarkable development of mining and metallurgy which took place after Agricola's death in Great Britain. For the mines of Germany and Austria-Hungary lost their importance in the last half of the 16th century, and it was England and to some extent Scotland who took over the torch and developed mining, but developed it in quite a different way, because there the emphasis was on iron and above all on coal, whereas the mines of Central Europe had been for mining of precious and semi-precious metals. But Agricola's diagrams and so on were actually used in England, although England actually went beyond Agricola, but developed no systematic treatise.
Well, there was another development out of this book. You remember that Pizarro's discovery of, or his seizure of Peru, and his subsequent discovery of the mines at San Luis Potosí, which were the richest mines of probably all history for a considerable period. Well, after they had worked off the native silver, the pure silver off the top of those mines, they came into metallurgical problems. And there is a note that De Re Metallica with an iron binding was chained to the altar in the cathedral at San Luis Potosí, and that the priest translated it to the miners as to the processes to be used. Well, now those processes moved from San Luis Potosí up into Mexico, and from there, they moved up into the Comstock Lode in Nevada. In principle, the same processes for the separation of silver from lead. Huh?
So Agricola's... In this connection, Mr. Hoover, that this taking of Agricola as a sort of Bible to Potosí, which I didn't know about at all, its most illuminating story, should in a way have cut the ground from underneath the German and Central European mines, because Europe was flooded with the silver, especially, and some gold from South and Central America, beginning in the 40s of the 16th century, and this cheapened silver so that it was no longer profitable to mine on such a scale in Central Europe.
It's another illustration, Mr. Neff, of the fact that technology is inimical or destructive of nationalism very often. You can't keep it within borders. But in his defense of mining, in the beginning of the book, as you translated it, Mr. Hoover, Agricola says that, for one thing, it's all right to dig metals because it's wrong to think that they have any, that they produce wars, that they lead to wars. I wonder what you think Agricola might consider... what he might think of his own principles in the world today when we have been, would you agree, somewhat immoderate in taking metals out of the earth and somewhat destructive in their use?
Among the